Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today, it's Friday. It's February the 6th. I am in Toronto, where it's currently snowing, and half the country is frozen. I just found out, like, the biggest lake above our city here, it's pretty much half the size of Mediterranean, I think. That's how big this stupid thing is. It's 65% frozen. I was just listening to the weather report this morning. According to the weather report, they're saying that we've never seen this for many, many years. And generally, we get like 30% of the lake frozen. Now we've got like people driving on it and having fun with the ice. Hopefully everybody stays safe. And my guest of honor today is Stephen Puri. And Stephen's joined me hopefully from somewhere warmer than Canada. I hope so.
Yeah, I'm in Austin, Texas. But I'll tell you this. I was working when I left Fox. I was working on a movie that was a sort of follow-up to 8 Mile with Marshall Mathers, with Eminem. And there was a big chase scene on the lake and a car chase scene that was all set on the lake. And it was a pretty fun. We did not end up shooting it before I left, but I always loved that.
There is a movie, you probably, Cold Road or something like this. I can't remember. The famous actor. I'm not big on remembering name of actors for some reason. I have no idea, but I remember this scene and it was shot in Northern Canada in Manitoba area, where that road only frees in the winter, and in the summer there is no road. And that's how they get supplies from one side to another through that road. It was quite the scene, though. Trucks loaded.
It's a different world. It snowed in Austin recently. Nothing like what you're accustomed to. We survived.
Well, welcome to the channel, Stephen.
Thank you. I hope this is one of the more entertaining and maybe educational episodes. You've done some great ones, so the bar is high.
No, I really appreciate your time with me. And I know you and I spoke before, and I was looking forward to this call. You've got a very interesting story. I can't wait to bring it out to the audience and share with the audience a little bit about yourself, a little bit what you do. Mm-hmm. And hopefully by the end of this conversation, this will be a human conversation. No bots here, just two humans talking to each other.
No AI bot attending this.
You know, it's funny. I don't know. Like, my wife and I watch YouTube quite a bit, right? So the other night she was telling me, I can't remember now. I can't, figure out which video is AI and which one is a human. We don't want to watch AI. I mean, I can produce AI video if I want to. And it's becoming very frustrating.
It is. And I'll tell you a funny aside. Keanu Reeves was on I think it was Charlie Rose not that long ago. And he was relating a story about how he had been to a friend's house who was a director to have dinner. And the friend has two like teenage daughters. Over the course of dinner, the teenage daughter said, "Hey, Keanu, friend of our dad, like, we know you're famous for these Matrix movies, but like, we've never seen them. We're kind of like, that wasn't our generation, right? But what's so cool about these Matrix movies that everyone talks about the Matrix?" So Keanu says, "Well, you know, it's a movie about a guy who wakes up, realizes that he's living in a simulated reality, and he wants to escape and get back to the real world." And the 16-year-old daughter says, "Okay, why?" Keanu says, "Well, you know, because he realizes everything he thinks is real. His whole life is actually a sim. So he wants to break out of that and go to the other world, which is the real world." And she looks at him again. She says, "Why?" And he's like, "Oh my God, wow. You're asking a very different question than what I thought you were asking." And he's like, "I felt old." The fact that she was like, "So what was the problem with being in a simulated reality? If you're okay, what's the problem, right?"
Oh, wow.
Yep.
So we are in a simulated reality now, I guess.
I'm just saying the snow has crashed.
So let's start with the easy one, if you don't mind, Stephen. Everybody's got a story. If you don't mind sharing,
what tell
got
a little
you
bit
here.
Of
what's
mine?
Your story?
Of course. Okay. Here's the fun reason to listen to this episode. If you are driving somewhere or playing along at home, right? Or at the gym. I am one of the few people you'll meet who's been a senior executive on a couple motion picture studio lots and also raised over $20 million of venture capital. And run three startups, founded three startups, one successful exit, two failures. It's true, you learn more from the failures. In doing that, I've been very fortunate to work with some really smart high performers. And what I do now is I run a focus app with a focus community of people who are generally like writers, designers, engineers, so they can focus during the day and basically get into a flow state.
So what was the experience like? You know, everybody wants to hear that at 20th Fox. Century Fox, you've worked for them for a while and you were vice president of production for them. Like, you've spent, what is it, 2 years with them?
So in a couple of years there, I will say this, style, culture of these organizations come from the top, and the style and values of Murdoch's really infused every level of that organization. It was a big value mismatch for me. I had been at DreamWorks for 4 years, working with Alex Kurtz and Bob Orsi, who were writers, Transformers 1 and 2, Star Trek 11, Eagle Eye, Fringe, Mission Impossible 3, a bunch of like big, big, fun summer movies. And when Fox approached me about leaving, they said, oh yeah, we'll double your salary, but we'll also give you the Die Hard franchise to run. You probably grew up watching the Die Hard movies. I was like, I did grow up watching the Die Hard movies. Like, do you want to be the executive making the next Die Hard? And we're at Wolverine. We'll give you the Wolverine franchise to run if you come here. And that was pretty attractive to me, even though many friends whose counsel I respected said, hey man, this is like, DreamWorks is a great match for you. Steven and Stacy, who were there running at the time, they absolutely want everyone to go home every night and try and make their projects 1% better. And it's an inspiring culture to work that way. And not every movie turns out great. I mean, it's hard to make a great movie. So even though you may try, mm-hmm. you know, lightning has to strike many times for something to be great. It's great script, great casting, great director, right time of year to release it, you know, all that. But I went to Fox. I was like, wow, that would be incredibly cool to go be the vice president running, you know, these franchises. And the reality was, yeah, it was a huge value mismatch. So as polite as I can say it, I did not enjoy my time at Fox. It was definitely impetus to get out and start a company on my own because I fundamentally did not get along with my boss, who's the chairman of the studio, and he hated me. So it was mutual. It was a love relationship, right?
It's funny how these things happen sometime there, Stephen.
I'm just saying. Yeah, that was
so now you operate or you started a company, I think it's called Sukha.
Yeah, it's called Sukha. Right? Sukha means happiness in Sanskrit. You know, and I can explain that name to you later, but it's really about, I looked at the high performers, like million-dollar screenwriters that I've worked with, top directors, top engineers, designers. And it was interesting to see which ones burned out, which ones were operating at that level. And, you know, in their 30s, they were like, I want to go pick apples in Oregon. Like, I just, get me out of here. I want to be a real estate agent in Toronto or something. You know, it's just, yeah. And which ones were consistently able to stay at the top. And the way in which they managed their brain energy was very interesting. And that's really what Sukha's about. Sukha's about saying, hey, if you have X number of things to do in a day, how can you do them faster than you think possible? And at the end, leave yourself feeling better. And that allows it to be repeatable when you look forward to it, you know? So that's really what I'm passionate about. It's a website, it's a community, and it's really fun.
So is this how the idea got started, Stephen? Is it from your previous experiences, from your previous career?
You know, it actually got started in a really funny way. A buddy of mine, a good friend in San Francisco, was an engineer at Groupon and then later at Descript. And he had asked me to help him to co-found a company with him around task management, around to-do lists. And that really doesn't interest me that much. So I love him. I said, I will help you for a while just because I love you, but that doesn't really light me up. Now, the funny thing is, in the course of doing that, I had a very interesting experience that I had no grounding, no reference point for, which is, as I mentioned, I'm here in Austin, right? I was flying to SF to go meet with the team the next day. And I thought there's an idea I had for a feature and I was going to mock it up, like go into Figma with my little cruddy design skills and kind of mock it up. So I go, what about something like this? So get on the flight. Alaska runs that nonstop route, right? And the captain's like, hey, kids, sorry, Wi-Fi's out, you know, see you at SFO. So, okay. So we take off. I start working. About 15 minutes later, we start descending. And I think, okay, we must be in Dallas. We're not that far from Austin. There's a hydraulic problem. There's something wrong with the plane. They're going to tell us when we're on the ground so they don't scare us. Like, oh, we have to switch planes or something. And I look down and over 2 hours and 40 minutes had gone by. I had no conception of that. But my designs were done and I liked them. I couldn't tell you if the drink cart came by. I couldn't tell you the name of the fat guy in the seat next to me. Like, I was lost.
You're in the zone, Stephen.
Exactly. I was in the zone, right? So the fun part of that about, I guess, maybe you've done this, is my expectation was I will get to the Uber, run through the hotel lobby, grab some sort of sandwich, go up to the room, and then stay up finishing these designs for tomorrow. My reality was I got in the Uber. I called a buddy of mine in SF. I was like, I have a free night in SF. You want to have dinner? And it felt really nice for the first time in a long time to be ahead of my day instead of chasing my day.
Yeah.
Later, I learned that was a flow state. And there are really smart people who have written about it, both what it is, how you get into it, how you accomplish more of your best work faster. And like you said, different people call it different things. Michael Jordan has that great quote about, when I'm in the zone, it's just me and the ball. But Picasso is his name for it. Einstein is his name for it. And we can go into flow states and talk about that if you'd like, but it's something that lights me up. I think it's amazing. I wish someone had told me about this in college.
Can this be induced, this flow state? Because a lot of people listening to this say, and they say, hang on a second now. I want some of that. Come on, share it with me.
If it's fair, let me set the table because I know there's a portion of the audience that is like flow masters. They like live in flow in the shower, right? Okay.
Most likely.
And there's another cohort that's like, I've heard about them. It's in the zeitgeist. Can you, someone define it? Okay. So let me just set the table for 30 seconds, which is there was a Hungarian-American psychologist, this guy, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, and he had a thesis. He said, if you talk to high performers in different disciplines, when they talk about the concentrated states they go into, when they do the thing that makes them famous, the thing we know them for, they describe it in very similar terms, even though some of them are athletes, some are inventors, some are artists. He's like, how can that be that they have this common experience of doing great things? He did the research, he did all the interviews. At the end of it, he wrote a book called Flow. It's the seminal work on this. It is why we call it a flow state. And he said, here's what I found. I named it Flow because we are all on the river, paddling to move ourselves forward. But if you align your boat with the current, it carries you. It magnifies your efforts. And that is what these people have figured out how to do and do it repeatably. So yes, it is something where his work has been built upon by really smart people like the Kotlers and the Cowles and the Neers about how does distraction work? How does music work? How does what's shallow versus deep work and things like that? We can go into that because I think it's magical, but he really set the foundation for this. The people then have done the, you know, standing on shoulders of giants kind of research.
Let's get to know Sukha a little bit. So what is Sukha and what does it do and who's your customers? You know, just the whole.
Thank you for asking. It's like asking about your child. Tell me about your child. Is he handsome? Is he good at math? Sukha is a website where we took the ingredients that you need to get into flow. And rather than you having to go to all these different apps, one app for the music, one app for the Pomodoro timer, one app for tasks, we just said, I just want one play button. I'm really simple, Robin. Like in the morning before I get to work, I just want to hit one play button, not hunt around for all these different things. So that's what we did. Sukha is a website that in the morning before you start work, you hit play. It gives you flow music, scientifically designed. There's a lot of research. The sweet spot for most people is 60 to 90 beats per minute. Certain key signatures, non-vocal, so you're not singing along with Blackpink or Britney Spears in your case. I know, it's okay. Don't be ashamed. It's fine.
So it's only a shower song, Stephen. Come on.
It's, you know what? No judgments here. This is judgment-free zone, Robin. It's Friday morning. We're in a good mood.
Absolutely.
So that's what Sukha is. Sukha is a place where people come to do their best work faster than they think possible. And it's largely knowledge workers, people who sit on their laptops for 3 or 6 or 9 hours. And they're like, I would like to do that in half the time. So it's engineers, it's designers, graphic designers, you know, UIX designers, it's bloggers, it's novelists, people like that. That's most
of what's Sukha's business model, Stephen?
Oh, it's simple.
How do you make your money?
It's a B2C SaaS platform. You can sign up, you know, monthly, subscribe, or you can buy a lifetime.
Yeah. And you know, for the audience, one reminder, Sukha is happiness in Sanskrit, according to Stephen. I learned this today. I learned it before, but I've forgotten. I heard somebody told me you have to repeat the same thing 6 times in order for it to sink in. So
okay, so I will give you one more time. I didn't name it. My wife actually looked at me and named it.
Really?
Laura and I met in yoga in New York, right? So we have a daily yoga practice. When we got married 3-ish years ago, we were going to Bali for our honeymoon, which is a great place to go do a bunch of yoga on the beach and hang out like, you know, newlyweds, right? So we're flying there. And I said to her, you know, this flow state website that I built, we need like a real title. We have a working title. We need to give it a real name. And every name I come up with is awful and descriptive. I said, what about like Amazon? Amazon wasn't named like online bookstore, you know, like Nike's not called like shoe company, you know? So she said, you know what? Maybe the next 2 weeks, your unconscious mind bubbles something up because no one's going to bug you. They know you're on your honeymoon, right? So we get there, get to the hotel. And I said to her, hey, you know what? I think you're right. That's a really cool way of thinking about this. Something that might seed my imagination is, do you mind if today, the first day of our 14 days, whatever, I speak to a couple of members and just go, what's your favorite thing about this? And that'll grow into something. She's like, I'm going to the pool, but I'll see you later, right? So I drop in the group chat, who is like 10 minutes to talk. Three people said yes. And I simply asked that, Robin, thank you so much for being a member of our early site. What do you love? Do you love the flow music? Do you love the timers, the smart assistant that keeps you off your phone while you're working? What do you love? Third guy I was talking to, I was going to the wrap up. Like, it's been 8 minutes. I really want to respect your time. Thank you. I'm going to let you go today. And the guy stopped me and he said, Steven, you ask the wrong questions. And I was a little taken aback. I was like, okay, guy that I don't know that well. Like,
yes. What is the right question?
What was the right question? Yeah. He said, you should have asked me why I pay you. And I was like, we don't charge that much. It's like 50 cents a day or something. And I was like, okay, great. Why do you pay me? And he said, the past year, I noticed I have two kinds of days. At 3 o'clock, I'm playing with my kids. They're currently 2 and 4. Or at 6 o'clock, I'm down on myself like, God, I was busy all day, but I didn't get anything done. And tomorrow morning, I'll have to start earlier and try and clean. The difference was, did I hit play in your website that morning before I started work? So I pay you because my kids are not going to be 2 and 4 forever. And I was like, you won that round. That was a way better question and answer than what I was asking. Thank you. So I tell this to Laura at dinner. She's like, that guy's more articulate about your company than you are, man. Like, he's really smart, right?
I'm hoping you hired him.
I know. He had a great, that's so clear. So we're going to bed, you know, like cute little honeymooners in our spa robes, brushing our little teeth, you know? And she looks at me with a mouthful of toothpaste. She's like, you know, in yoga, we hear all these Sanskrit terms, you know, your prana, your life force, and your karma, and your dharma. That guy described to you sukha, that feeling when you're in your lane, doing what you're meant to do, you can do it with ease. It's the happiness of self-fulfillment. She's like, that's what you should call your company. Because that's why he comes here. He doesn't come here to work faster. He doesn't come here to work better. He comes here to be in control of his life and be happy. And that's why we call it the Sukha Company.
So, and Stephen, before that, did you have a pseudo name or a temporary name before
that? We had a bunch of things we called it. There was a flow state name. There's a centered name. There was like flow app, distraction blocker. There's a whole bunch of like working titles that I knew none of them were good. And Sukha was the first thing I was like, you're right. What we actually want to deliver is you feel in control of your day, ahead of your day, not behind it, and you're happy.
Now, in your experience, like, you know, you've seen it all on the Hollywood production.
I've seen some things. I would say I've seen it all. I never saw a Jeffrey Epstein party, but I saw the rest.
Let's qualify that. Okay.
Yeah, now, exactly.
There are a lot of informations out there. You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday. He said, there's so many names. He's a friend of mine. He's like, here. He said, there's so many names on that thing. Everybody now that I know about, they are trying to Google themselves to see if their name is on the list.
Everybody, it's crazy, right? My son's name is on that list. He's 12 weeks old. I'm like, how did you get on that list?
Oh my God. The famous list. Oh, wow. I didn't think this podcast would be talking about that list. There you go.
You never know.
You never know.
It goes interesting places. Okay, that's bring us right back, Robin. What shall we talk about?
No, just the idea is that, you know, from Fox and DreamWorks, etc., there were like real mechanism that kept massive teams aligned and productive, in your opinion, or that's part of the reason why you're not there anymore?
Well, as I alluded to, I think DreamWorks did a very good job of declaring a mission and a set of values that brought the right people there. And if you are a leader of people, let me say the obvious out loud, which is managers are the people who are like, hey, Robin, make sure your TPS reports are in at 10 a.m., whatever. Like, that's management, right? Leadership is declaring a mission. Hey, we are here to cure cancer. We are here to develop electric cars. We're here to go to the moon. We're here to do whatever, right? Make great romantic comedies. And as a leader, you declare a set of values. This is how we're going to treat each other. This is how we'll treat our competitors. This is how we'll treat our customers. And if you do that, you attract the right people to your team. And I think that's often when I talk to team leaders, because people come to me because of Sukha and they're like, hey, I want this ring. When they talk about the problems, they're often hiring problems.
Now, in large companies, I mean, you probably seen that as an entrepreneur too. Like in large companies, like I've experienced it. I'm not sure if you knew that, but after we talked, I left the big corporation. Now I'm independent. I run my own company and 49 networks. Silly things. Like when you work for a large corporation, there's many people around you, teams, support, production, etc. Now I'm finding out I have to do everything myself. Just to issue an invoice the other day, I'm thinking like, I have to actually learn how to issue an invoice, calculate taxes, and put it in the unique form and, you know, send that out.
Wow.
I've learned it. It's not a big deal, but it's like, for me, I'm thinking like, now I have to learn this. I should have learned that a long time ago. So in your case, that support layer that you had in large corporations, how did you substitute for that as an independent entrepreneur?
I am a firm believer. Okay, I'm going to give you a strange answer, but it's going to come back to your question, okay?
Okay, no worries.
A friend of mine is the author of The Charisma Myth, which is one of the Amazon bestsellers for 10, 20 years, whatever, right? And it was interesting what she wrote in there. She said, we associate certain people with charisma. Oh, Brad Pitt, oh, Marilyn Monroe, or, you know, Bill Clinton, or, you know, Steve Jobs, whatever, right? And she said, there's this belief that it's an innate thing. She said, actually, it is a series of learned behaviors and mannerisms. And sometimes as a child, you are around a figure, often a parent, that has those. So you absorb it. And then people are like, oh my God, your child is so charming and so much charisma, because they were just a sponge around a role model, right? I think that is true in many ways. And as it relates to your question, yes, when you can observe great leadership, if you aspire to be a leader, you need to observe firsthand a great leader and pick up from them how they do it. It's like if you want to be a great basketball player, don't become the high school coach and watch a whole bunch of, you know, high school players play. Try and be around Michael Jordan, even if you're mopping the floors, but you witness how greatness is built. What does that practice look like? How do you, you know, that is absolutely a lesson I will give to my son, my eventual daughter. Just like, you need to find the role models and pattern match what they do. Not all of it. Some of it, you know, maybe it's tailored to you. But there's a reason why we talk to Larry Bird, you know, Magic, you know, Michael Jordan, guys of that era. They had a very clear idea of this is how you create greatness in our sport. And whether you're an inventor, an engineer, a designer, an author, like there are ways to do that. Author is hard. Author, I say, is hard because it's a very lonely occupation. It's hard to witness.
And patterning yourself around similarities around whoever you aspire to be, I think it's a manifestation of some sort that this is what you aspire to be down the road versus not really thinking about it. And then, you know, halfway through life say, oh, I want to be like that. Well, maybe, you know, like the Tiger Woods thing, you know, you learn to, you know, do a 300-yard drive at the age of 9 instead of 13, and it makes a difference later on in your life. Is that where?
I'm not sure how to answer that one. I think there is absolutely something to be said about innate skills. Like at 9, no matter how I was nurtured, I would not be having a 300-yard drive. Okay, let's just put that out there, right? I know that.
Okay, well, 200.
200, right. But there were other things that I probably did. Like I was accepted to USC when I was 14. Probably something Tiger didn't do, you know? Playing to whatever natural abilities you have and developing them, sure. I think is...
No. If somebody wants to become a golf player, I was thinking in my...
Yeah. Yeah. Be around the greats.
Yeah. It's just super simple. Surround yourself with people you want to be like them versus this, you know, when you were kids, probably, and in my case too, my parents always told me, choose your friends carefully.
It's absolutely true. That's why I'm here with you, Robin.
I appreciate it. Now, what's the difference between, in your opinion, busy work versus flow of work in practice?
Okay. So Cal Newport has written some fantastic stuff on deep work versus shallow work. And I'm going to be very blunt and somewhat mean about this. It is very easy to fill your day, to fill your team's day with the work that does not build a billion-dollar company. And a lot of companies have meetings that reinforce that. If I have to sit, which I will never do in my life again, but I have to sit in one more stand-up with 30 people who are like, well, Robin, what I did yesterday was X. What I did going into today is Y. But I'm not blocked. You know, it's just like I'm going to shoot myself to the face because let's be honest, it is the deep work that actually turns into a meeting where you walk in and say, yesterday, you know, I took 2 hours. I stared out the window and I thought about what our competitor is doing. And I think we should build this. And everyone in the meeting, their heads turn to you and they're like, we should leave this meeting now and go build that. That changes the trajectory of our company. And that comes from deep work. You know, that comes from having a certain amount of time. And that's really where flow states come in. Like flow states are about how do you go deep? And you don't go deep in 5 minutes. Like in between Zoom meetings, you are not going to have the $1 billion, you know, idea. Rarely. The research shows to drop into flow, for your brain chemistry to actually get to that, you're shutting down the prefrontal cortex, having that experience being connected. That's 15 to 23 minutes to drop in. And if you are interrupted in the middle of a flow session, it's another 15 to 23 to get back in. So what does that mean? That means you have to actually treat that time as sacred. So if you are an individual contributor, you need to block time in your calendar. This is a meeting with me. This is sacred. I'm taking 2 hours to go write my book, to go create the business plan for my restaurant, to write my app. And if you're a leader and you want to have those kind of ideas, not the, hey, I fixed the bug yesterday and today I'll fix the other bug and I'm not blocked. Like, if you want to have the deep meetings, then you need to, on your team, build a culture where we say, hey, let's have flow time. Let's have deep work time, whatever you want to call it. And let's not bug each other in that time. No Slacks, no Teams messages. Hey, could you send me that stupid thing and blow people's concentration? And declare that time.
Yeah.
You wanted to say something. I saw you about to say something. What was it?
No, I hear you about this, but it sounds to me like it's an individual thing. But meanwhile, you know, there's the other flip side. It's two sides to each coin. So the second side to the coin is the team. And which you alluded to earlier, can that be applied from one individual to a team, for instance? So we're all now on the same wavelength instead of async work and or autonomous.
Yeah.
Now we're all pushing in the right direction.
Well, let's talk about that. And let me spell out, when Mihai wrote his book, he said, I found this thing that I'm going to call flow, a flow state. The characteristics that he talked about is he said, in this state, all these people with whom I spoke, they said, they lose track of time. They're not looking at the clock. Distractions fall away. They're doing their best work in a compressed amount of time. And at the end, they can actually feel a sense of uplift, of joy, rather than depletion. God, I'm so tired. That was awful, right? And that can be a shared experience. Like you, suppose you're pair programming. You're two engineers, right? Two developers.
Yeah.
And you're deep in pair programming. You can get to a point where you do that. Like, for example, some of the research on how does the brain change in a flow state was done on jazz trios, because that sense of improvisation where you are flowing with two other people is a fascinating place to say, okay, can I see what your brain is doing when you get to that, right?
Don't tell me they put them onto a scanner where they're playing jazz.
That's exactly it. So the fMRI stuff about, oh, wow, look what happens to the prefrontal cortex, like that is from often that collaborative sort of sense of, oh, wow, you're in flow right now. And it's not applicable for everything. Like if you're stapling reports, if you're mopping the floors, you're doing the laundry, you're not going to be in flow. But when you say, oh man, I want to write that chapter of my book. I want to write that app. I want to create that business plan. Mm-hmm. That's a moment when if you go deep, you will do your best work in a short amount of time and you will sit back and go, I feel great, as opposed to, man, I'm tired.
It's funny, I've got a couple of things for you. When I left the company, where actually we came to a fork in the road and we decided to part ways. Mm-hmm. My wife and I had already booked a vacation to Greece. And, ooh, you know, while just before we depart, the news came in that I'm no longer employed. So we both looked at each other. What do you think? Should we continue the vacation plan or what's the story? She said, we already paid for it. I mean, what's the worst going to happen? Let's go. So we ended up going.
I like your wife.
And a few days later, I'm in Athens. I'm on a bus going from place to another like the tourists would do. So I'm sitting on a tour bus and I got this idea in my head. I asked my wife, I said, well, what do you think I should do now? Find a job? I don't want to find, like, in my head, I didn't say that to her. I didn't want to say, I want to find a job. And because she heard me talking a million times about my work ethic, how I work, I've got like a go. I got all these ideas in my head. I don't have any time to really put them together. She said, you always talked about putting your company together. Now it's the right time. Go put your company together. Literally, after that conversation, it was a two-hour drive to a next destination. I'm on the phone with the lawyers, with the internet service provider, incorporated a company, put a website together, generated an email address, and I started talking to suppliers.
That's amazing. Partners. It's funny the way the universe opens those doors in front of you.
But to your point, when you get a chance to go deep, you will achieve something. The problem with all of us is we are 1 inch deep and 20 miles wide, and nobody really has the option. I mean, we all want to go deep in certain topics or certain things, but nobody really had the time because their distraction is everywhere. Everywhere you look.
I disagree. We all have the time. Finite is it's a finite resource, but it is something we have the equal time. It is, we don't prioritize the same way. And I will tell you this. Suka, the community that I run, the Flow State website, is not for everyone. We are not for people who are going to spend their lives in social media. We're not for people who are never actually going to do the thing they talk about. I'll give you an example. There is a guy, we have a group chat there where you can talk about things you're working on, people can ask you about it. And it's a fun community, right? There's a guy, Roy King, who posted in the spring. He'd finished something, which whenever you finish a task once a day, you can post to the group chat. And his thing was, finished my dissertation. And people were like, hey, man, that seems like a pretty big one to just sort of like drop casually in the group chat. He goes, yeah, I am a high school assistant vice principal somewhere in Missouri. I have been working on my PhD in engineering. I have my day job. I have my kids and my wife. And I have about 60 to 90 minutes a day during the week that I can move this ball forward on my PhD. He's like, I use Suka, so that is supercharged. I get 2 or 3 hours worth of work in that 60 minutes. And he said, I just turned this in. So he was someone who said, yeah, you know what? I could say, oh, I'm so busy. I got kids. I have a wife. I have a day job.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was like, no, I'm going to do this. And he did it. And I have so much respect. When my children are old enough to ask, what did you do, Dad? I will not bring up any work I did on Independence Day, Transformers, Star Trek, you know, Die Hard. None of those made the world better. I will bring up Suka. Because Suka is actually... like people have published their books, gotten their PhDs, like done the thing. And it's not for everybody, but it is about priority, not about not having the time.
And people who wants to commit to something, right? So you can't, I agree, 100% agree with you. I mean, we all come from different backgrounds. We all have different interests in life. If your interest is to accomplish something, I'm guessing Suka is for you to help you manage how you get there.
That is right. And I'll tell you this, I have a very strong thesis. You know, Mihai had his thesis about flow and high performance. I also have a thesis, which is, I think that everyone has something great inside them. And the question of this lifetime is, are you going to get it out or not? Oh, yeah. And that thing may be the next great American novel. It may be a restaurant. It may be a child. It may be an app. It could be a movie, whatever it is. And the horrible thing is this. If you look at the stock market, at least in the United States, your stock market might be a little nicer. But if you look at the largest market cap companies, most of them, their business model is simply steal your life, period, full stop. And 10 years ago, they were embarrassed about it. You know, when Mark Zuckerberg would be called to Congress to testify about Cambridge Analytica or test, you know, he would be this aw shucks character in his little congressional testimony. He's like, oh, Senator, you know, Facebook is just for grandmothers to see grandkids' videos, you know? That day is over. You listen to their earnings calls, they're absolute mercenaries about your life. They're like, we have the money to pay the best engineers, the best designers, the best behavioral economists and casino gambling experts to deploy these techniques to get everyone's lives because we call it shareholder value. And by the way, next quarter, we're deploying these new techniques to get more of everyone's lives. And it sounds in the abstract like, oh, well, okay. But the reality is if Zuckerberg were to call you up, Robin, and go, hey, Robin, so listen, I want your life. I'm going to sell it to these advertisers. I will keep the money, but I'm going to give you some dancing cat videos, buddy. How's that? How does that sound?
That sounds like something that the one of Seinfeld episode where Kramer burned himself on the coffee and his after suing the company that made the coffee, he got coffee for life, latte for life.
There you go. And that's the thing is these companies, Elon's Twitter, you know, knockoff, whatever, the you know, Instagram, they are very happy for you at 80 years old to be sitting on the sofa, scrolling, double tapping and talking about how you could have written that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, did you see my episode with Wayne Schwartz? Do you know who that is?
I have not seen. No, I've not watched that.
We talked a lot about cognitive cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you're going with this, because once the social, whatever, you know, the Zuckerberg of the world mm-hmm. takes control of people's lives, which they did, now you are, that's the people worry about cybersecurity for systems. The interview that I did, it was sort of eye-opening, the cognitive side of it. Infiltrating people's brain, infiltrating people's minds, infiltrating how they think, distracting them from what their main purpose in life, as you were mentioning earlier. If you have a purpose and you got to come out and you're distracted by meaningless stuff. You know, that's deviating you from your ultimate purpose, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, for our discussion, you know, many guys come in, or many guests come in on the podcast, and they talk about leadership, leadership issues. But one of the biggest leadership gaps, in specifically introduced post-COVID, is remote working. So, you know, there are, before COVID, I remember my conversation with one of my bosses back in the days. I was asking if I can work from home. He said, no way. I said, why? He said, well, I don't know if you're working. I mean, you could be golfing. And then COVID came. Then everybody went home and nothing's changed. Everybody seems to be productive. Financials are doing well. So how, and I know Sukha helps in that remote working distributed
environment. Let's go actually before Sukha, if I may interrupt you, which is,
go ahead.
Here's the funny thing. Yes, you're right. During the pandemic, there was a shock to the system. Oh my God, we can't all sit under the same fluorescent bulbs 10 hours a day. We would kill each other. We have to go home, right? Now, here's the thing. In film, film has operated remote and hybrid for 100 years. Every film begins with writers writing in their homes, you know, writing partners, living room, coffee shops. At a certain point, some idea gets some traction. Small production offices opened. 2 days a week, you're in there meeting with the director, talking to the costumer, what will they wear, talking to the location scout, where would we shoot this? The rest of the week, everyone goes out to go scout, to go look for costumes, to go do rewrites for Brad Pitt, right? Then you're in, you know, production, RTO, right? And for months at a time, it's all day, all night, you're together. Then you go back to hybrid, picture editors, remote work. And because it's been done for 100 years, it's not a shock to the system in that way in film. Leaders know how to lead through the periods. You wouldn't call them the remote period, the hybrid period. You'd say, oh, you're in development. Oh, you're in pre-production. Oh, you're in production. You're in principle, you know, that sort of thing. So that's the funny thing is, you know, as an IC or as a leader, how that works. The thing you said, I have heard said to me. I've had leaders who have reached out to me, said, hey man, three of my guys use your Sukha thing. Can you tell me more about it? Should I get a site license or thing, right? So you talk to them. What are the problems you're trying to solve? And I'm going to tell you, you said exactly what they said, which is you dig down and they're like, yeah, you know what? 2 o'clock on Tuesday, I'm not really sure what Robin's doing.
I know.
I'd love to have a better sense of that. And that, and this goes back to our earlier conversation. That is a hiring problem, because if I, as a leader, declare a mission, we are here to cure cancer, and I know Robin's mom died of cancer, Tuesday at 3 p.m., I do not need to be watching you in your cubicle to know you are moving the ball down the field. And if I hired Robin, and he's had 5 jobs in 6 years, and he's pulling jobs off Indeed and LinkedIn jobs, I am an idiot for hiring you, because you are not here because of the mission, and you're not here because of the culture. And then you have a real problem. Robin's playing golf on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it's you hit the nail on the head. It's a hiring and trust issue. There's a lot of anecdotes around that. I know, and it doesn't need to be like for remote working. I know one individual, I've known him for many years, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't work for him for all the whatever. But this individual hires a friend of mine, who he gives her an office or a desk with her back toward him, and there's a glass walls between him and her. Mm-hmm. So he's always looking at her computer screen to see what she's working on. I'm thinking, wow, why did you do the hire? Like, if exactly. trust is that
completely
thin,
agree.
Why did you hire?
Completely agree.
So what metrics in lack of seeing people, and what metrics should anybody, or in your case, your subscribers, would watch for to assess if they are doing well, in some cases, if their team are doing well? They're doing meaningful work.
That's what here's the thing is, we have simple task management, and I think it's a very good way to measure how you're doing, because we encourage people to time box. We encourage you to monotask, and I'll talk about both of those for a moment. Parkinson's law, or Parkinson's principle, that tasks expand to fill the available time, right?
Yep.
So time boxing, as many smart people have written, and anything smart I say on your pod, let's acknowledge, comes from a lot of research by people who spent their lives working on this, okay? This is not original. Time boxing is the simple way of saying, how long should this take? Let me assign that and mentally hue to that. So every task you begin in Sukha, it shows you a little progress bar. You say it's going to take 45 minutes. Great. For the first 90% of that, your bar is green as it goes across. Then it turns yellow when you're in within 10% of you should be finishing, and you go 10% over and it turns red. So visually, as you work, you can see out of the corner of your eye, oh, I need to be wrapping this up. Like, I'm in my last 10%, right? So that is a really good way to measure how well am I doing, as well as how well am I estimating what things take? Because you do that for a while and you see everything you do goes red. Either you're spending your days distracted, which means I'm failing you, Suka's failing you, right? Or you need to acknowledge, oh, you know what? To write a blog post is not 20 minutes. It's 40. It's an hour.
Yeah.
And then as you go forward, your smart assistant Suka will say, oh, I see you're writing a blog post. Should we budget an hour for this? History has taught us it's not a 20-minute activity, right? So that's really important, especially when you talk on a team about people are interdependent. I need your blog post so I can write this marketing email that includes it. I sure need you to be smart about you're going to be done Tuesday morning, not, oh, I know I said Tuesday, but I really meant Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
These interdependencies are important. So that, I think, is a really key part, is time boxing. And the other part is monotasking. And I'll make this short because I see you have another question you want to ask. Monotasking. I know.
How do you know?
I can tell. I've spent years talking to people, right?
I've got a long list of questions.
I know. So here's the funny thing. With monotasking, you and I have been in the workplace long enough to remember when multitasking was this celebrated thing. Like, oh my God, he's an amazing multitasker. He can spin 9 plates and, you know. And then, you know, 20 years into that, the researchers were like, there's no such thing as multitasking. You're monotasking on something, and then you can burn brain energy by context switching, doing something else for a while, context switch, come back to the first thing, and you're actually slowing down because you're burning brain energy. So for that reason, we really encourage you to start something, finish it, move on. And you get points in the system for doing that.
So here's my burning question. I guess people are figuring out, like, you know, okay, Stephen Robbins been talking about Suka for a while now. What is it? How do I buy it? How do I install it? Is it an app? Is it a browser? What is it?
We wanted to make it as accessible as possible. Just like that guy said, in the morning before I start my work, I open up your website, hit play. It's that simple.
So that's your easy button, right?
It is, yeah. It is a website, thesuka, thesuka.co. Go there. You can sign up with your Google address quickly. You can put your own email, whatever you want. Sign up. 3-day free trial, cancel if you don't love it. And honestly, if you don't love it, please do cancel, because we have a community of people who are really supportive of each other getting stuff done. And I love that they do that. I'll tell you a funny thing. The original version, when Laura and I were talking about the name, it was like a single player game. You had no sense of anyone else in the community. And I had this idea, I speak to all of these people, almost like a hub and spoke model, but they don't know about each other. What if they did? And I spoke to a couple members, because I love talking to members about new features. And this one woman made up my mind in like 20 seconds. She listened to me and I said, you know, what if there's a group chat? What if there's a place for people to share what they're working on? She said, Stephen, listen, I can go to the Nike store. I can buy a pair of shoes. They sell me a left shoe, a right shoe. I put them on. I can run. There is a reason why 100 million people belong to the Nike Run Club, because you run further and you run faster and you hold each other up. She's like, you should do it.
You know, just one of the things is that, you know, this application or this initiative is solving for many people. If I can summarize on your behalf.
Please do. Probably better than I would. So here we go.
There you go. Is the commitment to a task and finishing the task. It's becoming very rare nowadays that this is happening. And you're right. I mean, the application that measures the, you know, when you get to that red state in your task accomplishment and you're over time already, if I was to run it, or anybody normal, like, I don't know if I'm normal, maybe I'm not normal, but anybody who's like
no judgment, remember?
Well, like, a lot of people say I'm not normal. I don't know.
Okay. No judgment, but we will label you're normal.
We label, that's right. So, you know, when you're running red all the time, I mean, you know, something is not right. You're right. You hit a nail on the head. Either you're not forecasting correctly, or there's something wrong with the way you're doing the work.
And then you can solve that.
Not necessarily. You're not talking about somebody, you know, responding to an email here, or you're not talking about, I got to do my video call with my boss on Monday morning. You're talking about major stuff, like, you know, dissertation, for instance, right? Or, you know, I got to get a degree in something, or I need to not necessarily like a 2 weeks or 1 day assignment, but that could be true. But you're more likely more to manage a long-term, larger projects, correct?
Yeah. And let me say this, because I'm someone who gets overwhelmed. I don't think about being a member of Sukkah as a long-term commitment. I think about it as a commitment today for the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I look at, oh, Laura and I have dinner with some good friends tonight. They're going to meet my son for the first time. What I think about is, okay, what can I realistically get done and feel good about?
Correct.
And I don't want to have that conversation with Laura. I don't know. Maybe you've had this. I used to have this more.
Hmm.
Oh, you know what? It's 6 o'clock. I know we have dinner. I still have some things to finish up. Can we make dinner not too long? Because I need to come home and probably finish this stuff later tonight. I don't want to be too tired. And that sucks. You're going to dinner with people who love you, who want to meet your son. And you're telling your wife, hey, man, can we make this not a long dinner? Because I have more work to do, right? I'd much rather say, it's 5:30. Great. Let's get in the car. This is awesome. I can't wait to see them. And that's it. And that's the night I want to have. Not the, I didn't get it done. I need to get back at it after dinner.
You know, spending time, people say this a cliche all the time, spending time on what matters, right? So there is a toll highway next to my house here that takes you across
the frozen ice road, you mean?
I'm sorry?
The frozen ice road?
Yeah, the frozen ice road. That's the one. It's the 407. And you know, when you start driving on it, there's a big sign on the front of it that says, you know, saving your time on what matters, you know, get you home quickly, spend more time with your family, that kind of thing, instead of you sitting in the traffic for 3 hours to get home. So it's the same idea. That's what I'm getting from you, is if you get things done quickly, you've got more time to spend with the loved ones.
Yep.
So where should our listener go from here in order for them to, you know, you mentioned the website a couple of times, maybe connect with you on LinkedIn, I'm assuming, and
I will make it even easier. If someone has a question about anything I brought up, oh, what book can I read? Who is Cal Newport? Is there a blog post from Near about distraction, right? My email address is very public. It is Stephen, Steven, Thesukha, Thesukha.co. I'm very responsive on that. If I'm not traveling or sick, I'll get back to you in 24 hours. It will not be a long email. You don't want to hear the story of my life, and I don't have time to write it to you. But if you ask a question like that, I'll find something for you and return it. So that is the best way to dig into any of these things. And I'll tell you, in terms of one thing to do, I'm not going to talk about Sukkah. I think people who want to try it will try it. I'm going to say this. If in the morning you do one thing differently, which is before you pick up your phone, before you make coffee, before you go do anything, you think about what is the one thing I could do today that would move my life forward. And you make sure you do it by the time you go to sleep. Your life will change in a month.
Stephen, as we wrap this up, I want to thank you so much.
That was awesome. Thank you for having me.
I really enjoyed the conversation. It was lighthearted, but we've learned a lot. Our audience have taken some notes. I can bet you that. And you know, one of the fun things about listening to podcasts is they're not boring. I hope so. I hope not.
I hope we weren't boring.
Some laughs in there, some jokes. That's fine. I guess people, you know, tell me that they enjoy the conversation. You're not going to believe this. So, you know, even though I talk about business, AI, and technology, all that stuff, people tell me that they listen to it in the gym. Like, this is where I really feel like so privileged that people actually using my conversation in a gym. Now, I go to the gym. I'm listening to every, you know, Full Metal Band. You can imagine just to
getting all pumped up. I can do this.
This is great. Thank you so much for being part of
this. Thank you for having me. And thank you to everyone who has listened here to the end.
Yeah, I really appreciate everybody for listening in. If you're coming in on YouTube, thanks for watching us. If you're coming on streaming platforms, thanks for listening in. And just for the audience, I summarize all these conversations on a blog post called robinayoub.blog, where we condense it to a consumable article that takes you about 5 minutes to read. If you don't have the time to listen to the entire conversation, which I encourage you to, please listen to those. Also, keep in mind that I also upload between 20 to 35 short videos, small consumable contents of this particular conversation with Stephen. It'll be all on YouTube. Please try to find them and learn. And if you have any questions, Stephen and I just sent you a LinkedIn connection. If you don't mind approving that, I appreciate it, Stephen. For the rest of the audience, I'm connected to Stephen. If you want to talk to him, reach out to him on LinkedIn, and you can't find him, hook up with me. I'll do the introduction. Thank you so much, and I will see you at the next episode. Thank you, Stephen.